Good morning to you, and thank you for joining me here on the Bible Baptist Hour. 15 minutes of, well, about there's about 23 minutes, 24 minutes, something like that. I can't remember the exact length of it. And we used to have a song. We changed our format a little bit, especially when we started in this lesson on Ecclesiastes. Make a little bit, give us more time to get it done. If not, we would still be trying to get past probably lesson 16 or so. We are at lesson 18, but let me give you some information first. Bible Baptist Church is located in Lupton on the east side of the road, so no matter which way you come into town, you can find us. Our service times are 9:45 for Sunday school, morning service 11 o'clock, evening service 6 o'clock. Youth time, Thursday night prayer meeting. Youth time for a younger group, 5 to 12, is Thursday night, and for teenagers, 10 o'clock Sunday morning. And we hope that you can come and participate, you know. When I was younger, opening to Sunday school was a big deal. And I can remember in the church we were in, the song that we sang, the courses that we sang, can't forget it. And we've been doing that ever since we started our church here. We have a 15 minutes before Sunday school starts. We sing songs, sing courses, and have a devotional. It's really short. It's not very long. And it kind of gets the morning started. And we hope that you will maybe give that a try and see if that's what you're looking for. Okay, so I said we're in Ecclesiastes. We're in chapter 10 today. I think we'll finish reading chapter 10. And this is lesson number 18. I think that gives us two more lessons. And we will be done with this study on Ecclesiastes. At the end of our program, hope you'll listen all the way through now. At the end of our program, our announcer will give you an address where you can write to us, and we'd love to hear from you. We used to hear from people quite frequently years ago, but we don't so much anymore with all the various platforms that they have, and I don't even know most of them. I don't deal with them, all right? Email, it's about what I do. And anyways, I know it's not easy to keep in contact with people, but we would surely love to see a little handwritten note from you. That would be an encouragement to us, all right? So, without any further ado from me, let's get into Ecclesiastes, starting at chapter 10, verse 12, and ending this chapter. I believe we'll finish out the chapter here today. So thank you for listening. Don't forget, get in church today. Be in church. We're not your church. We're just a radio program. Get in church. Now let's get to Ecclesiastes. As we said in our introduction, we are in the book of Ecclesiastes. We have about two chapters to go here. Two lessons as well. We're in lesson number 18. Solomon changes to a very familiar subject for the next four verses or so on the worthlessness of a fool. Now, this subject is dealt with over 30 times in the book of Proverbs, and he has mentioned it several times in this book. No one likes to think they're a fool, but many times actions and thoughts and words would certainly point to such a condition. As in the previous passage we talked about, Proverbs, which we didn't look up, he often compares a fool with the wise man. In verse 12, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up himself. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. I like that one. Verse 14, a fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? The labor of a foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. Gracious is a word that means showing kindness, courtesy, or charm. It also takes in the meaning of being merciful and compassionate. A fool is just the opposite. He is consumed with himself, and it won't take you long to find that out. Now, he's quick to tell you about himself and his accomplishments and his deeds and so on, you know, all the great things he's done. It is not wrong to speak of those things, but when one swallows himself up with it, then it's all he can talk about. He is not a self-made man, as you've often heard. He is a fool. I've heard people say, I'm a self-made man. There's no such a thing. It doesn't exist. Perhaps you said something like this, or I've heard it said, well, I put my foot in my mouth. Yeah, well, We all have a tendency to do that from time to time. A noted theologian and preacher of two centuries, or three centuries almost now, Nathaniel Emmons, once stated, "The weakest spot in every man is where he thinks himself to be the wisest." I said, the weakest spot in every man is where he thinks himself to be the wisest. Now, there's something to think about. Paul put it this way, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." You want that again? "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." 1 Corinthians 10:12. Another preacher of the past, Charles Simmons, said, "A wise man knows his own ignorance. A fool thinks he knows everything." A wise man knows his own ignorance. A fool thinks he knows everything. Each one of those quotes I just made to you could be used over and over again in relationship to people that you know, could they not? And a fool is basically just that, a fool. That's the point of the lesson. Solomon makes it clear. A man doesn't think he's a fool, he probably is. Now Solomon goes on to say in verse 13 that it matters little at what point you hear the fool, as the beginning of his speech is foolishness, and the end of it is, and I like this, these two words, mischievous madness. What a couple words, mischievous madness. Some examples of such madness are seen in such talk as, "Every woman has a right to her body, so abortion is not murder." Mischievous madness. Out of the same mouth comes, "Protect the spotted owl and the timber wolf." Yeah, well, mischievous madness. Folks, listen to me. If you get to know your Bible and you get to know the God of this book, you will find some hilarious stuff in here, and you'll find that God thinks so little of wise men, they get to be somebody. You know how Solomon got his wisdom? He didn't pray for wisdom. He didn't pray for money. He didn't pray that he'd be a great man. He just prayed, "Lord, give me the wisdom to rule these people. I'm just a child." The Lord said, "Well, since you didn't ask for money and riches, I'm going to give you a blank check. You just put in there what you want. And besides that, I'm going to give you all the wisdom. You'll be the wisest man." So when you get somebody who says, "Well, abortion is not murder, but we need to save the spotted owl. We don't mind doing away with a generation or two of people, but we sure need to protect those animals." Or how about, "We need to teach our young people about sex so they will stay away from it." That's called mischievous madness. That's what that's called. But each public school ought to provide abortion counseling and give away condoms. That's called mischievous madness. It is. And there's many of people out there, maybe, perhaps, I hope you're not on the school board and you promote this kind of stuff. It's called mischievous madness. Or how about this one here? "It's illegal to teach the Bible in the school, as that is the mixing of the church and state." Now listen to me, listen carefully. "But every prisoner has a right to a Bible and to attend religious services." And that's not a mixture of church and state? It's called mischievous madness. "It's not hard to detect a fool. He will announce himself to you." I'm telling you, sometimes I read the Bible and I just kind of chuckle and say, "Lord, you sure knew men. You sure knew men." A list of fools might look like this: Socrates, Plato, any member of the EPA, OSHA, Greenpeace, ERA, possibly Bill Clinton, Aristotle said, "No man loves the man whom he fears." "No man loves the man whom he fears." Really? I love my dad to death, but I sure had some fear of him. I love God to death, and I should have more fear of him than I do. A foolish and asinine statement if you ever heard one. Then there was the FDR, who said in his first inauguration, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Really? Well, FDR, you need to read the Bible again if that's the only thing you think we got to fear. The Lord said, "Fear him who's able to put both body and soul in hell." Guess who he was talking about? FDR. Well, I got to stop since that's not the subject we're discussing. Anyways, the list could go on and on and on, but I believe you're smart enough to figure it out. In verse 14, it says it all. The fool is full of words, but one cannot tell you what has been said. We discussed this back in chapter 5, verse 3, lesson 7, so I'm not going to rehearse all of that again. Now, the simple truth is that the more you talk about, the more you take a chance of making a fool out of yourself. You know what? Just be quiet sometimes. Don't have to pipe up and tell your 2 cents worth of whatever. Not only can a fool not know what is after him, but he is such a fool that no one can tell him. One who is a fool is known for 2 things. First, they talk too much and say nothing. Second, they're so full of knowledge that no one can tell them anything. Did you ever know someone like that? Did you ever know somebody who's not teachable? In my 40-some years, almost headed towards 50 years in the ministry, I've come across a lot of people who are not teachable. When you tell them something, they already know that. No matter what it is, they already knew that. Yeah, we knew that. My dad was a pastor, and he once asked in a piece of paper, tell me how much you know about, and he gave, I think it was the Old Testament, a woman wrote on the, on her paper, more than this sheet of paper's got room for. Okay, lady, did you made your point? Got your point? That means you don't know anything at all? Is that what you're saying? Boy, people are something else. In the first phrase of verse 15, it's quite clear that the desire of the foolish person to go to work. Foolish people are those who make excuses for not wanting to work. There's a lion in the street, Proverbs 26:13, which is just his way of making excuses for not going to work. Or they might pretend that they're not able to work, Proverbs 19:24, by faking an illness. The greatest excuse is that he's too tired, Proverbs 26:14. Sometimes he just pretends he cannot find any work. Years ago when I was working at a particular place, people would come in and ask if we had jobs available, and I would say, well, I'm not the boss, but I don't think so. Could you fill out this paper? I said, well, I can't fill it out, but the boss can. And what they were doing was is going to places where they knew they wouldn't get hired, and then having them fill out the paper, and then they'd go back to the office and say, well, I can't get a job, so they could be another week on welfare. That's what they did. They're foolish people, and they make excuses for not wanting to work. You work with some of them. You work around some of them. You know what I'm talking about. Somebody told me a while ago that they hired into this place, and 10 people hired into them, and I think it's been about 2 or 3 months. There's one left, and that was the person telling me about it. I hired 10, and they got one left. Now, you tell me what happened to those other 9. Maybe they were the 9 lepers that got healed and didn't go back and say thank you. Sometimes he just pretends that he can't find any work. Or, as Solomon put it, he knows not how to go to the city. Well, let's see here. They didn't go to some factory, as I was just telling you about these people that were looking for work. They didn't go to some place they knew there was work. They went to some place that was small and inconspicuous and then asked them for a job. And I'm not saying it's wrong to do that, but come on, what's your intent? Chapter 10, verse 16, woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child and thy princes eat in the morning. Verse 17, blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles, and thy princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. By such slothfulness the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hand the house droppeth through. A feast is made for laughter, and the wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. Curse not the king, know not in thy thoughts, and curse not the rich in the bedchamber. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell thee the matter. So it appears verses 16 and 17 go together. The child would appear not to be a reference to a royal child, rather to someone else. Josiah was 8 when he began to rule, and he was a good king. Jehoaz was 7 years old when he began to reign, and he was a fairly good king. So what we are faced with here is more than just a reference to a rulership of one of Israel's kings. Perhaps Isaiah 3:12 might be more what Solomon is speaking. The child and the women are now ruling America. You heard me. The children and the women are now ruling in America. As parents cannot correct a child without the HRS and the FIA and the PIT and the ZYO and some other communist government agency interfering. I'm not saying that they're all bad. I'm just saying they've stepped out of their purpose. One of our missionaries just reported that a baby was receiving treatment in an American hospital when he wanted to refuse certain treatment because of the side effects. A woman doctor who was a lesbian told him that he refused to let them do that and she would report him to the HRS for child abuse. The woman and the child's rights are now precedent over what is right and correct to do. This then goes along with verse 17, as the mindset of America's young people is partied all night, and they never eat when it's proper to do so. Every weekend is nothing but a party time, and this is also true of many who call themselves adults. So this leaves us without a moral backbone. We then see verse 18 would work into some context. When things are let go, the system begins to rot and corrupt itself. What used to be a strong family system is nothing more than a government-controlled commune. Wives no longer have to have their husband's signature. Children in the public school no longer have to have their parents' consent for certain things. And the home is nothing more than an incubator for the government. Your children are theirs. The system is rotten to the core and is no promised repair. Rather than that, there's further decay. We've booted God out, prayer out, the Bible out from our schools and our society so that our children grow up without a hint of who or what God is or where the Bible teaches about anything moral. A country cannot keep raising godless reprobates and expect to elect men and women who will change the nation for the better. I think I noticed that the first time Bill Clinton got elected, and I realized he was a draft dodger and went to Canada, and I realized how many military people voted for him, and I said to myself, we're going down the tubes. And tell me we're not, would you? Tell me that what you see right now going on in Washington, D.C. is good for America, and it's going to change everything for the better. Oh, I know what they're saying there, but they don't know. They're just lying to you. There is one other thought that can go along with verse 18. The idleness of the hand might well be compared with Ezekiel 16:49, where we learn that the abundance of idleness was the downfall of Sodom and Gomorrah. Oh yeah, before sodomy hit there, it was lots of bread and idleness, and that led to what they did. You know where America's at? Lots of bread and idleness. Can't get people to work anymore. It's a decay of morality. We have none. And I say that in all due regards and kindness to those who do, and some of you sticking up for the right stuff, and that's a good thing. But for the most part, that's not what we're seeing, is it? It's also an idleness of the people that caught the householder's attention in Matthew 20, verse 3. Idleness led to trouble and decay in anybody's life. Doesn't matter who you are. If you quit working, quit doing things, your life will decay. I'm not against retirement. I'm not. I obviously can't retire. Don't have enough money to retire. And I'm not complaining. I chose that life. But there are people today who that's all they want to do. At 55, they want to retire. Man, your life is, you've got lots of time yet if the Lord lets you live. I want to go out of here working. I don't want to go out of here laying around, lazy, doing nothing. I want to be working for the Lord. Now, verse 19 isn't that difficult, as the first part of the verse is quite clear concerning the reason for party and the drink. Nobody gets together to sit around and be sad. Even the dinner after a funeral is a time of sadness and quietness. The end of the verse is without, I should say after funeral, isn't a time of sadness and quietness. The end of the verse is without question exactly the way the world would see the value of money. Matter of fact, most Christians see it that way. They believe as long as they have money, they will be safe, and satisfied. It is not that money is the problem, it's the love of it. That's exactly what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which some coveted after they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. More trouble has been brought into people's lives by money than anything else on this planet. It was the design of the money that caused Judas, or desire I should say, of the money that caused Judas to do what he did. It was the glitter of gold that caused Ananias and Sapphira to lie to the Holy Ghost, and it cost them their lives. One man said it this way, money isn't everything, but it's ahead of whatever's in second place. Verse 20 tells us of a rather strange truth, that is that the birds often carry secrets. Notice that these secrets don't have to be spoken. They just simply could be a thought. Now that's frightening, isn't it? By the way, your thoughts can be read, Hebrews 4:12. Okay? Word of God is powerful. Yeah, sharpening two-edged sword. Piercing, dividing asunder the soul and thoughts. The man in Luke 12 didn't speak out loud. He just thought. Verse 17, the fact that we don't believe it doesn't change the truth. He adds, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. In Zechariah 5:9, we have two winged women who have wings like a stork, and they're carrying something at the land of Shinar, which in any Bible student knows is a place of idolatry. We also know this, that birds can be a reference to devils. When we compare Matthew 13:19, Mark 4:4-5, and Luke 8:12, I know that's fast, but we're ending our program here. The one who steals the seed is the devil, and his helpers are like the birds that devour up the seed as soon as it's sown. There's more. I don't have time for it. I want to thank you for listening as we finish out our 18th lesson. And next week, Lord willing, we'll get into lesson 19. We hope that you're going to learn something. I hope that the lesson is a blessing to you. And I know a lot of it I stumble over and get through quickly. I'm sorry about that. I've got a little bit of cataracts, and sometimes they hinder my seeing. So just pray for me, all right? Thank you for listening, and listen closely now at the end of our program. Here's our announcer. We'll be giving you an address where you can write to us, and we'd love to hear from you, need to hear from you. Thank you very much, all right?
Thank you for listening to the Bible Baptist Hour. It is our prayer that our message today will be helpful to your growth as a saved person. If you are not saved, you can be saved today by asking Jesus Christ to forgive you of your sins. Let us know you listen by writing to The Bible Baptist Hour, 3338 Main Street, Lupton, Michigan, 48635. Join us again next week for a new message.